Welcome to the Successful Farming Podcast. I'm Lori Boyer. Before we get into the podcast, we would like to thank our sponsor, Case IH. Case IH has solutions for every challenge, equipment for every farm. Case IH is built by farmers.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor, and it can do it all. Bale hay all day. See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Ship like a race car. Steer with ease. And it can also cool my juice box. Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out caseih.com.
In this episode, Lisa Faust-Prater talks with Aaron LaPointe about farming initiatives within the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska and his efforts to promote careers in agriculture to tribal youth. And here's Lisa with her first question to get the show started.
Can you tell me a little bit about your background? I know from the article I saw that you went to UNL. Tell me a little bit about your background of growing up and what got you interested in agriculture.
Well, so I've born and raised in Winnebago, lived here my whole life, and I'm an alumni of Winnebago Public School. And I guess growing up, I'm a big outdoors person. I still am. Growing up, I was big into hunting, fishing, doing all this stuff. And then I went off to school, actually on a sports scholarship, to play basketball. And I was just in Sioux City at Briar Cliff University. Mm-hmm. And college wasn't really excited about going to college out of high school. This was 2010 when I graduated. We actually didn't have a ton of people that would go straight to college from Winnebago. Mm-hmm. So I did do that, and really I credit that just to sports because I wanted to go just because I didn't want to stop playing sports. So then after I got into it, I got 3 years into college. I'm like, well, I'm pretty invested. Let's finish this thing out. But at that point, I really didn't even know what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I did know that I love to be outside. I'm an outdoors person. So I'm like, well, maybe I study something that allows me to be outside. And so when I was at Briar Cliff, I was studying environmental science. I was actually a summer youth worker, an intern at the EPA and the EPD, which is Environmental Protection here in Winnebago. That's where I learned a lot about our land base within Winnebago and our reservation. So that's kind of what the light bulb moment when I was like, wow, we have a lot of land and we don't farm any of it. And we don't have any farming entities. So like, I didn't grow up on a farm. I didn't even grow up around anybody that farmed. I grew up around my friends in Winnebago, pretty much all sports, skateboarding, that type of stuff. No real like farm background. So after being at Briar Cliff for 3 years, and then I stopped playing basketball, and it's not cheap to go to school there without sports scholarship. I'm like, well, I'm going to go to the university. And I was actually dating who's now my wife at the time, and she was going to the university. So I'm like, I'm going to go down to Lincoln and check it out down there. So I went down there, got introduced to their ag program, and I'm like, this could be great. Because at that time, this is 2013, Ho-Chunk Farms had just started in 2012. They were about to start their first growing season. And the guy that I worked for at EPA was now the guy running Ho-Chunk Farms. So kind of put that all together. I'm like, I think if I could get my ag degree, it'd allow me to be outside. I think I might like it. I don't know. But I know there's a huge opportunity for our tribe if we were to really explore this industry. So I changed my major to mechanized systems management, which is in the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources. But it was more on the mechanics type side. They called it ag engineering without the engineering side of it. Mm-hmm. So we did a lot of stuff like that, but it was really broad too. That's kind of how I bought into it, is they're like, it's not going to be focused on a tractor or corn. It's going to cover everything. It's a really broad degree. So that's why I went into it, got my feet wet with a lot of different parts of the industry. And then I created a passion for it through school of like, wow, if I can bring this to Winnebago, I think there's great opportunity because we have, our reservation is 120,000 acres. We own maybe 15 to 20% of that, but we lease it all to non-native farmers in our area. So I'm like, well, we can come back. Ho-Chunk Farms is there. Maybe that's going to be the future. So graduated there 2016. In 2015, I was an intern here at Ho-Chunk Farms. Got to get a little taste of what they were doing. It was very minimal at the time. And then after graduating, the CEO here was like, well, we have a tribal member that studied ag and we have a farm. Let's get this kid here. So they offered me a full-time job within probably a year. They made me the head of the company. And I'm like, all right, well, now. And that's such a new, it was such a new company at the time. Even though it started in 2012, they still hadn't really decided what their future was. Like we were leasing land, but we were just renting it out renting all the work out to the farmers and just kind of selling the commodities and being somewhat a part of it. Mm-hmm. We weren't doing too much. So it allowed me to kind of create what I wanted Ho-Chunk Farms to really look like for the future. So yeah, I moved back and I've been back here since, well, I built a house here in Winnebago about 4 years ago, but I've been at Ho-Chunk Inc. for almost 8 years now.
They had to be so excited to have you come back.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times we talk about brain drain in rural communities, and whether it's, you know, just any small town or I suppose in a tribal community too, where you send your young people off that go to college and then a lot of the times they don't come back,
yeah.
You know? So to have someone come back and have that sort of gained knowledge and expertise that you can put to work to help your community is huge. They had to just be so, so happy to have you.
I mean, it might be a cultural thing, like for Native Americans to come back to the reservation or feel almost obligated to give back or to help. And I've always felt that obligation myself, like going off to school. Even when I first went to school, we have an higher education program that helps pay for school. They help you get through a lot of that. They invest in you. You almost feel the obligation to say, well, I want to come back and pay that back to you. So, but then again, it was also the opportunity side of it is like me and my wife both went off to school, but the chances of us coming back probably were unlikely if there was an opportunity, and the opportunity came from Ho-Chunk giving us like, well, there's a career opportunity. And then you can see a lot of our development. Well, there's an opportunity to live here too.
Yeah.
And that's really what sparked a lot of the growth. And that's what helped kind of bring me back home too, is, I mean, my family's here, but I can also build a house here. I can have a profession that I love and it's going to make an impact. It was really along the lines of the opportunity too that played a big role in it. So.
Right. You can't stay in your hometown if there's no job.
Yeah.
So that's amazing that the timing worked out so great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I noticed when I just kind of drove around a little, I got here a little early and I noticed like some of the new housing that was being put up with like the solar panels and everything looked really nice. And yeah, it's just great to see, you know.
Yep, Ho-Chunk Inc. helped develop this little town right here. It's called Ho-Chunk Village.
Nice.
Which, I mean, it's not very typical. I don't know how many reservations you have been on, but yeah. Reservations don't typically look like
No, they don't. Yeah, I've been on a few, and yeah.
And it's a reflection of a lot of different things, mm-hmm. but it's the small local change that an organization like Ho-Chunk Inc. that is 100% owned by the Winnebago tribe.
Yeah.
So we're the economic arm of the tribe. So we do our best to create jobs, to create opportunity. Whether it's jobs, housing, whatever that might be. So
right. So you talked about how, at the beginning anyway, a lot of the land that the tribe owned was being leased out to other farmers. So are you guys are farming more of that land now?
Yep. So when I started in 2016 after graduating, I came back and I want to say we had about 800 acres under our control at Ho-Chunk Farms, mm-hmm. Which was pretty much tribal land, some allotment land. And allotment land is owned by the individual tribal members. They own mm-hmm. the interest in it, but it's managed by a federal agency, the Bureau of Indian Affairs. So we had about 800 acres back then. But the key to our growth was when we started in 2012, as a tribe, we have the ability to create our own laws as our own government. So we created our own policy to where in the past, all of our tribal land, all of our allotment land would go out on a blind bid. Whoever wins the high bid, they get the land, they get a 3-year, 5-year lease, whatever. And that was just the process.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we implemented a policy and law that says, well, that we're going to still do that, but any tribally owned entity has the ability to match the highest bid. So you're not getting a deal. You're just participating in that market and you have to pay the highest bid. But what that caused was a lot of our local farmers to increase their rents because they were like, well, there's another level of competition here. And that was something that was really one of the targets when Ho-Chunk Farms first started was our returns on our land were way below fair market value. And we're like, well, what's going on here? Well, we're not even participating in that. We're just kind of putting it out there and hoping that we get what we get. Well, if we're participating in that and we're leveraging these farmers to pay fair market value, or if they're not going to, we'll pay it and we'll farm it. And that was kind of the idea in the beginning. So through that policy and law that we created, it allowed us to start acquiring more land. So that's why people are so blown away by our growth. It was really the law that we put in place that allowed us to grow that fast. And that's how we went from like 800-900 acres in 2016 to we're like at 7,000 this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, but, and we've been at 60 around 65 to 7,000 over the last 3 years. So we grew really fast. And then now we pretty much farm all the tribe's land. And we have a majority of the allotment land. But farmers are just much more aggressive when they lease stuff now. And,
yeah.
And if I can't pay that, that's fine. The landowner is going to benefit from that.
Right.
So,
right.
And then now we've, through that, it stemmed so many more opportunities to where, well, we're farming 7,000 acres. And at first we were custom farming. We were paying a local farmer, hey, can you plant, harvest, whatever for us. Well, that's not creating a tons of jobs either.
Right.
And we want to be a part of it. We have a huge workforce here that, especially like the middle-aged men that want to jump into a profession that they could be proud of. Mm-hmm. Farming was kind of the next cool thing. So we start taking on more and more of our operations. So now we have one full machinery line where we run, say, 3,500 acres under it. We're still spread out though, because like our reservation goes into Iowa. Mm-hmm. So we have almost 2,000 acres in Sloan, Iowa by our casino. But then we have land over by Wakefield, Nebraska. So this is like a huge.
Yeah.
It's spread out pretty far.
Yeah.
So it's hard to be able to do all that. So we still have a few contractors that we work with, but I think I talk about it a lot in a lot of our articles is that we didn't identify as farmers, as Native Americans, especially going to school here. Like I said, I never even stepped foot on a farm until I was at the university. So like we're trying to knock down that barrier of that perception that farming is a non-native thing.
Right.
Well, how do we knock that down? Well, we got to give people opportunity. And on top of that, we have to teach them. Like I talk about how we're growing crops, we're growing farmers too. We have to create our farmers ourselves because we don't have that opportunity to experience it. It's much different now, 8 years later, but before it was like we were teaching people how to drive tractors. We're teaching people about what it means to grow a crop and things like that. And that's been a big part of our growth is in that area because it creates a tons of jobs, helps our bottom line somewhat. It's just so expensive to farm.
I mean,
it doesn't make a huge impact on the bottom line. But I got 9 full-time staff now instead of one person just managing the numbers on a spreadsheet.
Right.
So
yeah, people,
and that's more
like,
impactful than.
Yeah. People like getting their hands in the dirt and like actually with their feet on the ground and
stimulating the economy just right here. And when we go through that and then now like we talk about it quite a bit too, is like, well, we can get Ho-Chunk Farms to this level. Well, we're at 7,000 acres. We're getting our feet wet in livestock. We're doing organic. We've got the conventional stuff. We're doing all these little, we're kind of branching off, but who's going to be that person that takes us to the next level? Well, we got to be thinking about what Ho-Chunk Farms look like in 50 years. Well, it's not going to be me. It's not going to be my new farm manager. It's going to be that next generation. So we've been working with the schools for ever since I started. I knew the future of Ho-Chunk Farms wasn't in my, wasn't going to just be me. It's like, well, I got to find my next leaders.
Right.
So we've been working with like the EduCare, which is our preschool, I think it's 0 to 5. And then we've been working with the Winnebago Public School for the last 5 or 6 years at some capacity. They do like some local production of our traditional corn and things like that. We're trying to knock a barrier down. We're trying to knock that, trying to get our kids to think a little different about what farming actually means. Cause I don't think a lot of our kids even realize our tribe's largest asset is our land base, but we just go about our day and we learn all the general stuff in school, but not even understanding that as a tribe, our largest asset is our land base. And at one point, we're in a much different position now, but at one point we were just taking the very minimum. We were at the bottom of the food chain, taking rent, like 1 to 2%. Like, and now we're like, we're occupying it. We're creating jobs with it. We're making money while we're doing it. And then we also got to look at the other aspects of how we're taking care of it too, for the next transition of leaders. So It's this huge, monstrous, evolving thing that we want to be huge here in Winnebago,
right?
With the farm, but there's so many other aspects that are working in contingency with it, along with it. So
yeah, to make it more, you know, available and visible to students, just gives them, you know, more options in their mind of things that they'll be able to do if it's something that they grow up knowing is a possibility for them. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you said you grew up, it wasn't really a thing, you know, farming wasn't something on your mind. But if these kids today are, you know, are thinking about it and, you know what's happening here, and that's something they can maybe decide they want to study or just go right into, I think it helps if you have a plan. I mean, it always helps if you have a plan, or if you feel like there's something for you, you know, it's motivating. Creating
that pathway for an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy to see that now, like, it in such a short amount of time. Like, my new farm manager, a big part of, like, what's gotten some of these kids involved, I have, like, I want to say, like, 7 students in college right now that are studying agriculture. And they're all tribal members, and they all want to work at Ho-Chunk Farms. I'm like, well, we better grow. We better do something, because everybody's excited about it. And Ho-Chunk Farms is just barely getting started with what they're doing. The ag industry is so big. Just row cropping and organic farming, that's nothing compared to what we can do in the ag industry. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be those 6 or 7 that are going to take us to that next level. Well, we have to create opportunity. But a big part of that was just, like, for me, a lot of those kids or a lot of people studying ag right now, or like my new farm manager, is like, you see a familiar face doing it, or you're like, hey, he went to Winnebago. Mm-hmm. He's a tribal member. He went off to UNL and got his ag degree. Well, I can do it. Now we have kids at UNL studying ag. And we got kids, well, we started an ag program at Little Priest, which is our local college. Yeah. And that's like, the kids see Ho-Chunk Farms, all the stuff that they're doing. Well, I can study that just here in Winnebago. So now we have that diversified ag program, which is, I'm really excited about, because we'll have our first graduation of that program here after this semester. And those guys are like, after I'm done with this, I'm going to UNL.
That's so great.
I'm going to Wayne, because Wayne has a good ag program too. Uh-huh. And like, there's excitement around the industry. And I'm like, well, we're just getting started. Like, don't feel like Ho-Chunk Farms, like what it is now, is what it's always going to
be.
There's so much more opportunity. That's why I talk about even like land acquisitions and all the different, yes, like we need to grow. That's where the opportunities
are. Yeah. Agriculture is so big. Yeah. You know, and there's so many different things you can do, especially if you start looking at, you know, livestock at all, or, mm-hmm, you know, different kinds of crops, and just, you know, people who focus on agronomy, or people who are, you know, more focused on production or machinery or, you know, chemicals, that kind of thing. There's so many specialties, mm-hmm, that the more people you have learning different things, like, you can build such a good team.
Yeah, that's why I've been pushing Little Priest to do an ag program for a long time. And they're like, well, what do you want it to be? I'm like, I don't want it to be specific to anything. Mm-hmm. Introduce them to ag. Introduce them to what ag has to offer across the board, because you're going to get a huge variety of students that come into this. And I don't want them to come in and be like, oh, I don't like tractors, so then they're gone. No, let's make it something where maybe there's one part that they don't quite understand. But if we're talking about the entire aspect of agriculture, you're going to spark interest somewhere along, mm-hmm, the line. And I mean, I go talk at the school all the time, or like, I was the keynote speaker at the graduation, the high school graduation. And I'm like, people don't even understand what ag, like what it really is. I mean, there's kids that love video games. Agriculture is evolving when you look at precision ag into,
oh, yeah,
I could use some people that know how to play video games. Like it's across the board. All them skill sets could be utilized within the industry.
Yeah.
And so trying to just, like I said, break down that barrier of understanding there's so much more that this industry has to offer. And it's going to take a group of leaders to do that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I feel like I've pushed the ball a little bit, but there's so much more opportunity that needs to happen. And it's coming along, but it's going to take a little while. But
yeah, that's so good about keeping it sort of open, because, you know, when you're 17, 18 years old and you go off to college, and I mean, I have 3 boys in college right now, so I know, but like, you know, it's a lot to ask someone who's that age, like, what do you want to do for the rest of your life?
Yeah.
You know, and to kind of keep it open. And my youngest is a geography major. So like, he doesn't know what he wants to do with it. And I'm like, that's okay. Just go in and study, and then you'll find a path that, yeah, works for you, you know? And it's like that with ag too. Just learn and you'll see where your interests lie.
Yeah. We actually have quite a few programs just within the Ho-Chunk Inc. umbrella that helps kids get somewhat of an understanding, like, you're either going to find out that you somewhat like it, or you're going to find out that you don't like it. And, mm-hmm, let's save you a year at college.
Yeah.
So we have a high school apprenticeship program where we have like 20 students from the high school that come, juniors or seniors, and they spend like the last 2 hours of their day on a work site. So like, I've had one at Ho-Chunk Farms before. We have a lot that go like with construction or IT, mm-hmm, and they're just getting a little bit of real life experience the school day, and they get school credit for it. But it's like those types of opportunities. And I push as much as I can say, I mean, we would love to have you at Ho-Chunk Farms. It takes a lot of time and investment to take on a high school kid for 2 hours a day. But it's those type of opportunities that is probably going to help evolve Ho-Chunk Farms in one day.
Yeah.
Then we have the internship program where Ho-Chunk Farms always has an intern. We've had 2 the past couple of years. And this year I have those 6 students. They all want to be an intern. I'm like, I got one. We got one internship. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to open it up for 2. But I mean, that's extremely promising to see like that type of interest. And I mean, it's not just Ho-Chunk Farms that's going to offer ag. One of these guys might start their own seed business. Well, we'll buy seed from you. Or they might start their own agronomy consulting company. And you can be our agronomist. Like, there's so much more opportunity. And I think it just took a little bit of, like I said, a little bit of perception change of like, we can be farmers. I said that once in when I was talking to a class too. I'm like, when you think of farming, and this is just at Winnebago Public School, like, what do you visualize? Like, if I said a farmer is going to come talk to you today, what would you think would walk through the door, or what would they look like? And they were all like, a white guy, cowboy boots, cowboy hat. Like, that's what a farmer is to them. And I'm like, I'm a farmer. I'm sitting here right here. And I was in the same classroom before. And like, how do you get those kids to think like that, or to at least get rid of that perception anyway, to where they can kind of relate with that? And as Native American people, we've always been farmers. Like, we've created corn. Like, how do we reconnect with that? And it really starts through education and through the school system, and allowing these kids to at least see themselves in those shoes. And then let alone see, like, both of us being local tribal members, and I have a whole group of guys that run our operation out there, all tribal members. Well, these kids are seeing them. Like, we go to the school, bring the combine and all that stuff up there, and they see that. It's like, we're just knocking down barriers to help open up more opportunities. And it's been extremely successful. So we do a lot of organic farming, and it kind of sucks for the people that did it, but we do organic soybeans, and organic soybeans, you have to like literally walk the beans to.
Oh yeah, like the old days.
Yeah, it's old school farming.
Yeah.
And so we had like 600 acres of organic soybeans this year. I'm like, wow, we should get people hired right away.
Yeah.
And it was just like a day labor position. I'm like, we're going to hire a bunch of day laborers. We're a corporation, so we can't just hand out cash at the end. We had this whole sophisticated system that allowed people to get paid at the end of the day. But I'm like, well, yeah, let's do this program. Let's get it out there. And we have a policy here that any tribal member that applies for a job, they get an interview no matter what, if they're not even qualified or anything. So let's get this position open, because I need them starting soon. Like, we were planting, and I'm like, I want them by the time weeds start to sprout, we're out there already. And we posted the job, Ho-Chunk Farms. It was literally, the position was bean walker. And in like 8 hours, 37 applications. We had to close it. Like, I was like, you got to close that, because that's, we have to give every one of those people an interview too. So we had it open for one day, closed it. And I think by the time we actually closed it, there was like 43 applications submitted for bean walkers.
Nice.
And it's like, that just shows there's eagerness, there's excitement around just that type of work. And tons of males just starting to enter the workforce, or guys that just want to be a part of the farming because they see the great things that are happening. And then, like, those are those type of moments where you're like, well, I think we're doing what we need to be doing. This is the stuff that our community needs. If there's that many people sitting here waiting to want to work, we need to invest in that. And if we got 37 people with full-time jobs at Ho-Chunk Farms, what does our community look like? It's thriving. There's a thriving economy. Right. So that's why I say Ho-Chunk Farms is just the tip of the iceberg right now. And there's so much more for us to do, but it's expensive. There's a lot of growth that has to happen, but we're coming along, I guess.
Yeah. It's exciting. Yeah. So I had read that you were working on land acquisition as well. So that's key if you're looking at growth. That's an expensive, I mean, you know, I just saw there was a record breaking, you know, it was like $26,900 an acre plot in Northern Iowa last week. It's insane. Yeah. It's so hard. It's so hard to acquire land.
Especially for tribes on the reservation. It's extremely hard to buy land too. There's so many barriers there, because it's in our tribal constitution that we can't sell land within the jurisdiction of the reservation. So if you're selling your land, you know, if you're selling it to the tribe, it's never going to be in the market again. It's gone. And I mean, farm communities, they're close. They know each other. They're friends. They grew up with each other for generations. And so that's kind of a barrier, because people are like, oh, maybe I don't want to sell the tribe. I'm going to sell to this family over here, because maybe one day it'll go to the market and my family will buy it back again. So there's that barrier. There's tons of other different perceptions and barriers that we have to deal with. But on top of that, you have this crazy land market and capital resources. I mean, Ho-Chunk Inc. is doing okay. Our tribe is doing okay. But you just said it, $26,000 an acre, and we need to buy if we want to buy a reservation back, we need to buy 90,000 acres. Well, that's nearly impossible. Mm-hmm. But we've done everything we could. We've bought, I want to say we're around like 500. We're about to close out another 200. So about 700 acres in the last 3 years.
Nice.
So, I mean, chipping away at it.
Yeah.
It's expensive.
It's a process, you know.
But I say that all the time, and I'm trying to push some legislation that would help us with this issue, because it's the new farmers, it's the next generation of farmers that are eager to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. But then all the land around us is being leased out because those guys don't own a farm no more. They're just like, all right, I'm just going to lease it out. And we're just sitting here eager to, I mean, I got 6 students in college right now, mm-hmm. got all these young people in school that are excited about it. And our growth is dependent on land acquisition. Like I said, we farm almost everything the tribe owns. That's farmable. And so we've been kind of stagnant, and that's what one of my biggest issues that I've been having to deal with at Jump Farms is, how do we get more land? We need more land because we need to create more opportunities.
Right.
Yeah, we're buying more and more equipment. Every couple pieces of equipment offers one more job. But if we can continue to grow our land base on the backside, then I think there's going to be much more opportunity in the future. And it's not going to be a buy the reservation back in the next 10 years. This is a long-term plan.
Oh, yeah.
But like when I talk to some of the congressmen or the lawmakers, and I talked to them about, we started an ag program at the college. We have an ag program within the school system. And I have all these people that want to work in this industry. The government's worried about the next generation of farmers. There's all these programs about, I mean, mm-hmm. I work for the Farm Service Agency.
Right.
Too.
Yeah.
And our biggest concern is, who's the next generation of farmers? Like, where are they coming from? Who's going to be doing this? And like, I feel like we're doing such a good job of creating that environment around wanting to be farmers. Mm-hmm. But we need the opportunity too. We need the opportunity to whether it's acquiring land, or even if we could lease it. I've tried to lease non-native land for a while. I got one guy that leases to me, but the other people are like, no, we got this. Like, and it sucks for us because it's within our reservation. It's land that we used to own, and we've lost it through many different government structures, policies, acts.
Right.
And it's like, God, we're ready to do this. And like we used to, and we're being a little restricted. So
I think a lot of people don't realize that there is land that is part of a reservation that is owned by people who aren't a part of the tribe. Like, if it doesn't make sense.
I was just on a podcast yesterday, and the guy was like, I've never heard that. I never knew that was a thing. And I'm like, well, honestly, you look at our reservation, 120, 130,000 acres. We own about 20% of it. But of that 20%, only about 5 of it's farmable. Mm-hmm. We lost a huge part of our reservation, and the part we lost was all the farmland. Mm-hmm. We own all the woodland areas along the river.
Right.
So it's kind of tough to understand too, because they're like, well, how is it even the reservation then? Well, it was all our land at once.
Yeah. Yeah.
At one time it was.
Yeah.
But over a long period of time and a lot of different issues, we've lost a lot of that. And we want to regain it back. We'll buy it back.
Yeah.
Let's just give us that opportunity.
Right, right.
And,
yeah.
And that's why I think it's important that we continue to push on our end to be a part of this industry, because I have a huge passion for agriculture. Even though I work in all kinds of different sectors now, but agriculture is my passion, because I know that everybody's always going to have to eat, and there's always going to be opportunities in agriculture. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the most important things that happens in our world today, is this agriculture and the evolution of it. What does it look like? People are adopting all these new concepts, regenerative farming, and all these things we need to do to help change the issues we're having with our ecosystems and things like that. We're introducing all these concepts, and it's like, it's funny because we had people come here and they're like, yeah, we have this regenerative structure that helps build soil and it fixes carbon and all this. And I'm like, that's what we do already. That's a native concept.
Yeah.
That's how we farm.
Right.
It's nothing new to us. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm glad that people are jumping on board with it, but it's very simple and it's very organic to what needs to happen. And I think we've done a good job of at least setting that standard, or trying to pave the way for something like that. Like, mm-hmm. on our farm, we're about as conservative as it gets when it comes to soil fertility, water management, and things like that. Like,
you have to be. Yeah. That's good.
Because we're farming with a mindset of, I'm farming for my great-great-great-great-grandson.
Right.
I'm not thinking about my son.
Yeah. So. Yeah, right. Another thing that I read was that you were working with other folks on food sovereignty. which I know is a huge issue. And, you know, just looking out the window and seeing like a village market, like we talked about that, that's like a big thing. And just having food available is big in a lot of tribal communities. I know that's not, you're relying on a gas station.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in towns where that's all you got.
That's all we really have besides the market.
So, yeah. So that's amazing. And, but when you're talking about food sovereignty here, like, tell me what you're doing, what you're working on.
So when I first came back in 2016, the tribe was facilitating a group and we called it the Food Sovereignty Task Force. And that task force was put together after doing a data collection or survey around access to fresh fruits and vegetables and how that relates to all the health issues that we have, all the chronic diseases that
right.
Americans struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
And so we work with, well, that group consisted of the hospital, the college, who has an ag extension, and then like Ho-Chunk Farms, our nonprofit, HCCDC, and then our tribal leadership was on there too. And all the people that are kind of a part of that, and brought that group together and like, well, yeah, the reason we're having all these issues at 12 Clans, which is our hospital, is because it's a reflection of people's diets in our community. Well, their diets are that because we have a Dollar General, and that's about it. So we can go buy frozen pizza, and that's about it in our community. And some people can't drive to Sioux City. That's the closest grocery right. store, and that's 20 miles away. In a town that struggles with poverty and things like that, they're not going to have access to that. Mm-hmm. So that group came together and developed a couple of plans. So in like 2018, we started the Tribal Farm, which is separate from Ho-Chunk Farms. And that's the nonprofit. We developed a structure that creates an opportunity to raise free money and a really kind of focused area, which was just like fresh produce. Let's do nice. As much fresh produce as we mm-hmm. can. And through that group, we also started the Tribal Farm. And then we started the village market, the farmer's market, whatever you want to call mm-hmm. it. The plan for that and how that was kind of the central hub. The Tribal Farm would be the big vendor that has, like our Tribal Farm now is awesome because we have a manager there that is really passionate about what he does. So they're like the big vendor for it. But at that time, Ho-Chunk Farms was also doing like our traditional Indian corn. That was something that a lot of people in our community didn't know how to do. Mm-hmm. And Native Americans with their corn seed, they're like really protective of it because they're scared that somebody will steal it or steal the genetics or
right.
whatever. So trying to get somebody in our community to at least give us some seed to do an initiative like that was really tough. But luckily, my grandmother let us use our family seed. So we started a project in 2017, which was around the project that was educational. It was cultural. It was food production. It's mm-hmm. a very high demand product in our community is our traditional Indian corn. So Ho-Chunk Farms was doing that. And then we partnered with the nonprofit. We did like raise garden beds. And then we started the garden tilling program. This is all 2018 timeframe-ish. And we were trying to do all these different things. And it's crazy because the tribal leadership on our committee at that point were like, we never know what's going to happen. We could have some huge event happen. And how do we feed ourselves? Like how we depend on so many other people mm-hmm. to eat and let alone the stuff we get to eat is probably not the best. So that's the stuff we were planning for 2020. We learned that we probably should be prepping for that because then everything went down
yeah.
with COVID. But we were already doing a lot of these little efforts. Like we did the raised garden bed initiative. We did 200 raised garden beds in our community because we did raised garden beds because our housing is like really consolidated uh-huh. and it's hard to have a garden.
Oh yeah.
Or like we have apartments, a lot of these multi-family.
No, that's perfect. Buildings.
So we did like the raised garden beds and it just like our initiative behind that was let's just get people to at least think about producing a garden.
Yeah.
Cause it was very scarce in our area. Like my mom had a garden and I knew like one other person, but otherwise like gardening was a thing of the past. Or
right.
It wasn't cool or whatever. And we wanted to make it cool. And we had that grant that did the raised garden beds. And then we donated like soil starter plants. The ag extension office would offer like soil testing and education around how to prep for your garden, how to manage.
That's amazing.
So like we did all these little different initiatives. All we wanted to do is get people to start growing their own food. Cause yeah. we figured you grow your own food after you're going to start to appreciate, well, this took a lot of work to grow this tomato. I'm going to eat it. And then next thing you know, you change your diet habits to where you're actually eating the food.
Yeah.
And then that's why we built the farmer's market too, because we did have people doing gardens and And through those garden initiatives, we started to have a lot of little vendors pop up, like started to spark entrepreneurialism to where, well, now we have an area where you can actually go. If you live in the top floor of one of these apartments and you can't have a garden, well, go to the farmer's market on Friday or mm-hmm. whatever you want. So that was kind of our initiatives early. And we really haven't let up on any of that. Our tribal garden is huge now, has an orchard, has like a 2-acre garden of just about anything you can think of. Has a greenhouse, 2 hoop houses, nice. Chickens, goats.
Oh, that's great.
Pigs, like they're on a smaller scale, but it's all localized. Like we can go buy it over here. Like, yeah. It's all such a,
that's it's a amazing. Localized
system that they're not so worried about the bottom line. They're worried about producing as much food as they can to go there. And it's all kind of stuck. So our farmer's market still goes. Our Indycorn project went from, in 2017, when we first started, there was like 1 acre in our community. Mm-hmm. And we've gotten as high as like 25 acres. To this past year was 17. 25 was during the pandemic when everybody was freaking out and we're like,
yeah,
we're going to grow. Oh, cause I mean, 25 acres seems like nothing, but our traditional Indian corn is picked by hand and harvested right. by hand.
Yeah. That's a lot. So I guess a big plot. If you're doing yeah. like sweet corn, it's kinda like or whatever, sweet corn. Like that's yeah. a big plot.
And those still continue. Like I think one of the coolest things that I've experienced at Ochoa Farms was our Indian corn harvest this year because we have it at the Farmer's Market Pavilion. We actually built a fireplace to cook the corn over there. It's really nice. And that's kind of the area we do the harvest at. And last year we had like 150 people there. There was music playing. There was the school, like classrooms came down to help. And then our elder, we have 2 elder villages and then our senior center. Like there was tons of elders there. And I don't know, just the environment was really good.
So it's
like
cool.
the community feel, but there's a cultural aspect because our traditional Indian corn, we only share certain stories, our history stories during the harvest of a corn. Mm-hmm. So like those opportunities, those platforms are being developed through things like this that allow our elders to share that and connect with people and just be around and like let our kids see that. And when they get to be a part of that, and I mean, they're getting a little bit of agriculture, they're getting the corn, but it's much more than that. It's food. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, we donate all the corn that we harvest. It's not a business venture. But then, I mean, you get all the different elements of education and just trust me, these kids are pumped when they get to go pick corn.
Oh, yeah.
Get out of a classroom and then go.
I mean, oh,
it's not
yeah.
fun work, but they would probably much rather be doing that than in a classroom and just creating those opportunities. And sometimes that stuff sticks. Like the kids that are in college, a lot of them did Indian corn in high school when they're there at the school. And that might've been their first opportunity to be exposed to that.
And so you said that your grandmother let you have some of her seeds. So that's like, you know, I've written about like heirloom gardening and using heirloom seed, you know, before and how a lot of, you know, like immigrants would sneak seed in their hem of their dress or whatever, that it was like so precious
yeah.
that it was like a reminder of their homeland and that it made them feel home and they could grow food that was like familiar to them. And, you know, same, you know, with your grandmother keeping this precious seed and that it was so valuable to her history and.
And she loves our Indian corn project now because she's our tribe's matriarch. She's turned 93 a couple of weeks ago. And like she gets to come down and be a part of that too. So
that's so neat.
And then she knows the history of our seed because she grew up along the river. I mean, she was in the era when they lived along the Missouri River mm-hmm. when we lived in our traditional homes and stuff.
Right.
And it's her mother's seed, which has been my great grandmother. But she was the one that got to be a part of the movements because we're from Wisconsin. That's where our tribe's from.
Oh, sure.
But we've been moved all over the place. So getting to hear the history of like, oh, that seed that we're using for this project and seeing it all flourish, it made it from Wisconsin to South Dakota to Minnesota. And I mean.
Like resilient.
Yeah. And it's still here. And then now through the project, we're able to offer the seed too. My grandmother lets me give it to tribal members. And they can't grow it for seed. Like she's like, if they want to produce it for food, they can.
Yeah.
But I don't want them growing it for seed.
That's amazing.
And now it's like we have this seed bank. And in 2017, when we first did it, there was 3 growers. There was a church and 2 families. I can't think of the name of the 2 families, but those families are protective of their seed.
Oh, sure.
And through the church, my grandmother's a huge member of our church. And it was our family seed that we did at the church. But they were all like, the average person up there doing corn was like 80. And it's like, how do we get our young people exposed to that same thing, especially if the families aren't going to share? So at that time, there was 3. And now we have, can't remember the number, but there's probably close to 20 in our community that does their own plots.
Instead That's of, so neat.
They would come to our harvest, be a part of it. And they're like, hey, can we grow our own? Well, yeah, come sign up for some seed. In my seed, I used to have one sitting around here. I might have gave it away. But in our seed bags, it shows instructions like type of fertilizer you should use and when to plant, when to harvest. And then everybody else knows how to do it from there. So, so now instead of having to offer it, I mean, our project is really turning into an educational experience, and there's people producing it for their families on the backside.
Yeah.
It's more of like, instead of giving somebody a fish, teach them how to fish.
Right.
They're doing a great job.
That's so cool.
I've seen it. And now like our Indian corn, it's seen our Indian corn people that just wanted to do a plot. Mm-hmm. Now they have a huge Indian corn plot. They have a garden. They're like a vendor now.
Yeah.
And it's just evolving to more.
Years ago, oh my gosh, it's probably been 20 years ago, I went to Rosebud in South Dakota, and there was a program there where like a youth center, and it was a tribal youth center, and the kids were, they had a huge garden and they were doing like the Three Sisters garden. So I wrote about that and like talked to the kids, and it was like, oh, it was so great. It was really neat experience to
see our youth crisis intervention center, which is right up on the hill here. We partner with them on Indian corn too. They do Three Sisters too.
That's neat.
They have a cultural teacher up there that kind of helps them with it. But yeah, we partner with them, Wonderbury Public School, Boys and Girls Club, the Winnebago Tribe. We do our own. And then, yeah, there's a tons of individuals that will go out and will disc, plant, and then they just take care of it from there. Because some of these guys, they want bigger plots, big families. So we'll go plant it for them if that's the case. But a lot of these smaller community gardens, they'll plant by hand too.
Yeah.
It's stuck, and it's kind of, I've been happy watching the transition of like no gardening or nothing to this farmer's market, like going over there on Friday and seeing all the vendors. And we'd had none of this before.
Like, yeah.
And it took more of an opportunity than anything, even though we literally had to like spoon feed them because we tilled the garden. We put the fertilizer down for them. We gave them the tomatoes, the pepper plants, the seeds, any seeds they wanted, whatever. Like, we were just giving it all to them. Like, we got the resources. Mm-hmm. We just need you to take a little bit of ownership.
Yeah.
And watching that grow, I mean, it's been good. And I know that it's going to have ripple effects when it comes to like physical wellness and people's diets and things like that. Because all it takes is 1 year of having a good garden and you're addicted, and now you're making your meals out of your stuff that you're growing.
Right. And then if you get enough to be able to preserve some food, then that's a whole thing for winter. Then, you know, you can or freeze or dry or whatever you choose to do. That makes a difference in your diet in the off season.
Yeah.
And just feeling connected to your land, you know, even if you are, like you said, living in the top floor of an apartment, you can still feel a connection and, you know, grow something. And like, that's your... You did that, you know, it's a thing. It's a good feeling.
Yeah. Our Ag Extension office out of Little Priest, they do a ton of educational classes. And one thing we did is we bought like 50 dehydrators and canning machines.
Oh, nice.
And then as long as you took the class, you could take that too. And like, we track all of our gardeners and then the people that participate in the programming. Like, that's the Ag Extension gives out the starter plants, the seeds. They do the soil testing if you want it done. Like, it's a pretty big role in what we do. That's kind of the secret ingredients to all of our success in Winnebago with food sovereignty and food production is everybody's on board with it. And it's not just like Ho-Chunk Farms is doing this, the college is doing this, the hospital is doing this. No, we're all in the same group and we're all talking about the same things, and we're leveraging each other's skills and resources to cast a broader net to make a bigger impact. So,
right.
And that's what some communities and tribes struggle with, is connecting all those entities to be like, hey, we're all fighting the same fight. We're trying to help minimize the patients we have at 12 Clans. That's our goal. How do we do it through food production and giving people the opportunity to offer a better diet? So,
yeah, it's nice. I drove past the hospital and, you know, saw the school and everything. And it's nice that you have that. The hospital looks amazing. And it's nice that you have that resource right here. I mean, I know in a lot of places I've been, you know, especially in, you know, different like tribal communities where you're so far away from any sort of decent healthcare and you just feel very removed from those kind of resources. So it's great for you guys that you have.
Yeah, our tribe took over our hospital
together.
I want to say this had to have been about 7 years now. It was like right after I got here, they took over control of the hospital. IHS used to, the Indian Health Services under the government used to run it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we took over ownership of it. And now the tribe oversees it.
Nice.
And now it allows them to be much more proactive in some of the stuff that they're doing. I just met with the CEO of the 12 Clans yesterday. And he was throwing out all these ideas of how they want to incorporate what the hospital is doing with what the farms are doing. Like, talked about having a fresh produce pharmacy where their prescriptions are diet-based, not medicine-based. And how do we incorporate that in our community? And like, that's the nice thing about coming together and bringing all those perspectives and complementing each other more than competing with each other, because we're all fighting the same fight.
Yeah, absolutely. I see that you're the first Native and the first minority to serve on Nebraska's FSA.
Yeah.
So tell me about that.
It was a bit surprising to get the opportunity.
Yeah.
But
it's, and you're young, so like that, yeah.
And that's what, even people that come to our, whether it's a hearing or whether it's coming to talk about one of the new programs or something, it's like seeing a young guy on the Nebraska State Board, especially a kid of color, like, like what's going on here? But it's like I said, knocking down those barriers and putting ourselves in, sitting at the table with those people that are making decisions and helping navigate the future of what that looks like. It's been awesome. It's eye-opening. We do quite a bit of stuff with the Farm Service Agency through Ho-Chunk Farms. Like, I mean, obviously risk management things, some of the different programs. We don't do a ton of like CRP or anything because we're row crop farming, but we do a lot of stuff with NRCS, all that through USDA. And this helped me, sitting at the seat with the Farm Service Agency, it allows me to see all this programming and the USDA's initiatives from a different lens instead of like going out and shopping for a program. Well, we're helping put programs together that fit the farmers more than trying to complement whatever FSA wants. Like, it's driven around the producers, and that's what I value a lot. And then, I mean, sitting on the board with those guys, I mean, those are the people that sit on that board, very intelligent, a lot of history, a lot of knowledge around agriculture. We're all spread out. We have a lady that used to run a dairy, is now row cropping and all that down in southeast Nebraska, down in the corner. So get to hear a broad knowledge base around agriculture, and then they have so much expertise in policy and law and politics and all that stuff that plays into this. But getting to be a part of that, and we're like setting pricing and yields and putting programs together to fit our Thurston County area. Like, me getting to be a part of that is crazy to think. Like, we're usually reactive to what's happening, and we just, hey, we have to go along with it instead of being a part of that decision making. And that's what's been a great opportunity for me, on top of just showing people we have a seat at the table. Let's take advantage of it, or at least push to be a part of that conversation. And all it really takes is participation and creating opportunity in those areas. So
yeah,
it's been good. It's a learning experience for me because I haven't sat on a ton of boards at that level, but I mean, you meet a lot of people that care about agriculture when it comes to the farm service side of it, especially like the loan side of it and things like, how do we support farmers? Right. How do we take these tax dollars and get the most bang for our buck by helping producers in any way that we can?
Yeah.
And it's nice to bring the farmer's perspective instead of the policy writer that wears the suit and tie in DC. We got 5-6 pair of cowboy boots in there making the decision. That's what it should be.
Yeah. And it's great for you to be involved. And I mean, I know that the USDA has not always been, I mean, honestly, last fall I went up to South Dakota and I was talking to one of the guys who was involved with the discrimination lawsuit against USDA. And, you know, so I learned about that. And so, and he talked too about just being involved and like being part of the process. And so you being part of this board and being involved in this entity and these decisions and having your face in the room is really important for not only for like Nebraska in general and the other people on the board and for, you know, farmers of color everywhere, but also then you think about like the kids here and other kids of color in Nebraska and everywhere that they see you and, okay, my future is not just in the hands of these people who don't know me or who don't recognize my life, but this guy gets me and he's has this important role. And that's, I think that just like representation is so huge.
I probably do bring a pretty unique perspective when it comes to things that we discuss at that level.
Yeah.
And I think it only strengthens those programs when you bring every perspective and
absolutely
an understanding of things that are going on. I mean, because there's a lot of things that people don't quite understand when it comes to tribes or Native Americans in general, and just getting that education out there and perspective and knocking down barriers of what, like just educating people. There's, when I talk to other Native students or whatever that might be. It's, we can stand around and we can complain about, oh, that program don't work for us. Like, why would they do that? Or why would they do this? We can sit here and complain about it, or we can create a pathway to have a seat at the table. And that's where the change is going to happen. Yeah. And I'm trying to encourage people it's crazy to see how many Natives we have in working within the government now. Like, somebody I see as a friend and somebody that I've always seen as a guy that kind of paves the way is the new FSA administrator, Zach Ducheneau. I've worked with him through the Intertribal Act Council, but seeing him go to be at that level, mm-hmm. now overseeing the FSA. And then now it was funny because he's like telling it, we need to be at the county level because there's county boards too. And then he's like, otherwise you could just go to the state level. Like, we need to participate in that. If we're going to want change for these programs to fit for tribes or to fit for farmers of color or just fit for farmers in general that have to deal with all the issues that we see, we got to come to the table. We can't sit back. So, and I think that's something that I've tried to embrace through sitting on this board is like, I don't see myself as this huge that's at the top. Like, I just see myself as a basic person in Winnebago. I want to be a part of that. And you got to go outside your comfort zone if you want to do that. Mm-hmm. First couple of meetings were a little scary, but now it's like, now let's get to work. What can we do?
That's awesome. I'm so glad you're doing that.
I was surprised, and I was surprised they asked me to come back again, but I'll continue to do it.
Yeah, this is fantastic. Small communities in general, just like, it's so hard to be successful, and it's so hard to kind of get ahead, you know, just to see your community thriving. It's so good.
Thank you to Aaron LaPointe for being our guest here today. And thank you to our sponsor, Case IH. To learn more about the Nebraska Winnebago Tribe's efforts to promote careers in agriculture to tribal youth, log on to winnebagotribe.com. You can also check out Lisa Faust Prater's story of this hometown hero on agriculture.com.